This is the Read, Write, and Create podcast, the podcast where you get a bite-sized session of creative writing coaching from me, Lori L. Tharps. I'm an award-winning author of both fiction and nonfiction, a journalist, and a former college professor. I've spent more than 20 years writing, teaching, and coaching creative writers, and I created this podcast because I want to help as many BIPOC writers as possible get their stories out of their heads and into the world. Are you ready? Let's go. So everybody knows the name Langston Hughes, right? And I'm sure you know him as a poet and one of the most famous writers from the Harlem Renaissance. But did you know that Langston Hughes is recognized as the first African-American writer to make a living solely from his writing and lectures? Yes. Langston Hughes was definitely the hardest working writer in Harlem and throughout his life before and after the Renaissance. On this episode of the podcast, episode number 26, if you're keeping track, I'm going to use the life of Langston Hughes to give you guys a pep talk on how to make a living with your writing, even in hard times. Hello, writers, wordsmiths, and scribes. Welcome back to another solo episode of the Read, Write, and Create podcast. I'm super glad you're here. I'm glad if you're here for the first time, or maybe you're coming back as a regular. I'm just happy all of you are here, because that means you're a writer. You love writing, and or maybe you just love me. All of that is good in my book. And you know what else is good? Langston Hughes. Sorry, I know that was a really weak segue, but we're going to go with it. Anyway, I literally love Langston Hughes for so many reasons. He is one of my favorite literary ancestors. I love a lot of his poetry. I love that he loved to travel. I love that he spoke Spanish and, like me, fell in love with Spain and the Spanish people. I also love that he was a versatile writer who literally wrote everything, poetry, journalism, novels, short stories. And it is that versatility of his that inspired me to choose him as our literary ancestor for today's pep talk, because these are some trying times for writers and we need help and a pep talk. I literally saw a headline the other day that said, "Journalism is in a free fall." Journalists are being laid off all over America, particularly journalists of color. And then right after that, I saw this very startling statistic that said only 1.9% of books published by major publishers in the United States are written by Black women. Now, I knew that number was low, but when I saw it like that, 1.9%, I was flabbergasted. And on top of all this, journalism in a free fall, Black women not getting published, then we have all of our melanin-challenged extremist friends having a heyday with their book-banning crusades all over the United States, trying to squash the stories by BIPOC authors about BIPOC people. So yes, it is definitely hard times for a writer right now. It's very easy to get discouraged and feel like there's no way to make a living as a writer. Why even bother? And that's when I really started thinking about Langston Hughes and his claim to fame as the first African-American writer to make a living solely from his writing. So I'm thinking, if my friend Langston was born in 1901, then the hard times we're having now cannot compare to the hard times he was living through. Objectively, his hard times were 1,000 times harder than what is happening in 2024. So I figured, looking at how Langston structured his career, we could learn a thing or two about making a way out of no way as a writer. For example, did you know that when Langston Hughes went on assignment, and he was really a traveling writer, so going on assignment was almost all the time, he had to carry his big old clunky typewriter almost everywhere he went. I mean, I don't know if you know what old-fashioned typewriters look like, but they were like in their own suitcases and were super heavy. Do you know Langston almost got killed by the fascists in Spain because he couldn't run fast enough carrying that typewriter all over Madrid? Seriously, that's not an exaggeration. No computers, no cell phones, no internet, but same expectations for quality writing from writers. Then add to that, in other words, how difficult it was to actually be a really good writer, add Jim Crow, the Great Depression, violent racism, and literally no mainstream audience or appreciation for Black stories. And yet, James Mercer Langston Hughes made a living from his writing. So I figured if Langston can do it, so can you, or at least you can try. And even if you can't quit your job right now, your 9-to-5, and live strictly from your words, you can still learn a thing or two from Langston about how to get your words out into the world, get published, and get paid, even when it feels like the whole world says you can't. So without further ado, here are 5 literary life lessons from the Langston Hughes Manual of Living a Successful Writer's Life in Good Times and Bad. No, that's not actually a real book, so don't bother Googling it. I just made that up. Anyway, these are the ways that Langston managed to get paid for his writing starting in his early 20s. Until he eventually made a full-time living solely from his writing, this is the way he did it. Lesson number 1, learn a new language. This may sound far-fetched, but Langston Hughes added to his employability because he was fluent in Spanish. He was able to get translating jobs. He was hired to be a war correspondent in Spain for the Baltimore Afro-American because he spoke Spanish. Langston Hughes had never been a war correspondent, and that's not a job you just pick up. But because he spoke Spanish, they sent him to Spain to cover the war for their audience. After the war, Hughes continued to work as a translator for many Latin American writers and poets and found great prestige in Latin America because his work was also translated and published in different Latin American countries. So that's like getting paid twice for the same work. So how did Hughes learn Spanish? Well, he ended up spending 15 months in Mexico when he was, I think, around 18 or 19. He was trying to bond with his father, who had abandoned the family when Langston was young. Langston's father had actually moved to Cuba and then ended up living in Mexico, trying to escape American racism. Familiar story, right? During those 15 months, Hughes and his father did not really make up and make nice, but he did learn Spanish, which ended up serving him very well for the rest of his life. So if you have some foreign language skills, try to improve them so you can write in other places. You don't have to be good enough to be a translator, but there's a lot of other writing jobs you can apply for and get if you can speak and understand more than English. All right, lesson number 2, make writing your priority. Langston Hughes was so determined that he was going to be a writer with a capital W, he was willing to walk away from a quote-unquote good job so that he could be a better writer. Early on in his career, before he was like Mr. Langston Hughes, Langston got a job as an assistant to Carter G. Woodson. Yes, the man we can thank for creating Black History Month. This was apparently a pretty prestigious job in an academic institution, but my man Langston quit after about 2 years to become a busboy in Washington, D.C. Why? Because it would give him more time and mental energy to work on his poetry. Fun fact, you know that fantastic Washington, D.C. based bookstore, Busboys and Poets? Yep, it was named for Langston Hughes because of this fact. Love that. So make writing your priority. All right, lesson number 3, get up and go. Langston Hughes was incredibly practical. He knew the world was not the Black man's oyster, especially a Black man who wanted to make a living from his writing, especially a Black man in post-Depression America. So Langston made the decision early on to go wherever the work was. He literally crisscrossed the United States more than once to pursue writing, lecturing, and teaching opportunities. So determined was he to write and to make a living from the writing. Even if the location was really far away or seemed completely disconnected from his familiar, Hughes went. Case in point, in 1932, Langston Hughes traveled all the way to Russia after quite an unexpected paid writing opportunity came his way. I'm going to read just a tiny bit from Langston's second autobiography, I Wonder As I Wander, to explain why he went to Russia. Langston writes, "While I was in California, a wire came which caused my plans to change. A Negro motion picture group was being organized in Harlem to go to Russia to make a film. I was invited to be a part of such a group as a writer to do the English dialogue for the film on a 4-month contract. We were to sail from Brooklyn in June. This unexpected chance to work in films in Russia seemed to open a new door to me. At that time, Hollywood did not employ Negro writers. Many young white writers whom I knew had well-paid Hollywood writing jobs, but I had never been offered such a job, nor had any of my work been purchased for motion pictures. To Negro writers, Hollywood was still a closed shop, with the Negroes closed out. It was my intention to try very hard to make a living as a professional writer, so I was interested in all fields of writing. But I thought if I were ever to work in motion pictures or learn about them, it would have to be abroad. So I canceled the few engagements I had pending in the Middle West to sail for Europe." So my man, Langston Hughes, was ready to go all the way to Russia just so he could learn how to write for film. And that leads us to point number 4, diversify your skill set. Langston Hughes knew he wanted to make his living from writing, but he knew he'd have a better chance at achieving success if he could write in several different fields. Admittedly, Hughes's first love and his first success as a writer came through poetry. And perhaps today he is still best known for some of his poems. However, Langston, Mr. Practical Hughes, knew good and well poetry was not going to pay his bills. So he wrote for newspapers. He wrote novels. He wrote screenplays and stage plays. He wrote 2 autobiographies. He did literary translations. He wrote song lyrics for Broadway musicals. He was a newspaper columnist and a short story writer. He wrote children's books, essays, and even operas. So if you're just wishing on a star with your novel writing, take a page from Langston Hughes's Manual of Literary Success and up-level your offerings. Learn how to do more and consider other types of writing jobs to make money and keep your passions alive as well. And now we come to our last lesson. Lesson number 5, give the people what they want. One of the things I admire most and respect the most about Langston Hughes is that despite his willingness to write in just about any field, he did not compromise or kowtow to editors or even his wealthy patrons who told him not to write about the common man, more specifically, the common Black man. Like Zora Neale Hurston, Langston Hughes was often criticized by the Black intelligentsia for writing his poetry in the dialect of Black people, and because sometimes he wrote stories centering the lives of lower-class Black people. Hughes was a chronicler of the people he lived with and whose lives he witnessed on a daily basis, and that's why he was beloved by most Black people. That's why he was successful and stayed employed, because he understood the needs and the wants and the desires of his people, who were his intended audience. Langston Hughes was not interested in writing about white people or in Black people who were striving to prove themselves worthy of the white gaze. Even when he went to cover the Spanish Civil War, and this is a perfect example of what I mean, Langston Hughes was out there on the battlefield interviewing the few African-American volunteers fighting fascism in a war that was not their own. Langston was so intent on finding the stories of the colored people in a European war, he gave coverage to the Moroccan mercenaries who were fighting for the fascists, simply because he wanted to give the quote-unquote Black man a chance to tell his story. And because he knew that the people back home reading the Baltimore Afro-American would care more about the war if they could see themselves in the story. Come through, Langston. Come through. So there you have it. These are the Langston Hughes lessons for staying employed when you're Black, or otherwise colored, and the world really isn't making things easy for you as a writer. I will recap in case you missed something. Number one, learn a new language so you have a larger pool of jobs to choose from. Two, make writing your priority. If you don't make the time to write, you won't have anything to show that you can write or that your writing is valuable. So prioritize the writing. Three, get up and go. If the job requires you to move to another location, do it. Opportunities abound if you're willing to move, sometimes even abroad. Four, diversify your skill set. Making a living as a writer means being able to write in many different ways. Don't be a one-trick writing pony. You can have your passion, but you also have to be practical. And number five, give the people what they want. Be mindful of the fact that gatekeepers don't always have their fingers on the pulse of what the people really want and will support with their dollars. Case in point, Tyler Perry, awkward black girl version of Issa Rae, Octavia Butler, Terry McMillan. We have plenty of examples in addition to Langston Hughes to give the people what they want and stay connected to your audience. Finally, keep in mind, you don't have to live exactly like Langston Hughes. You don't have to do all these things. You can pick one or two of these Langston life lessons and give them a try to move the needle on your writing career. Or do them all and let me know how your writing career flourishes. Now, I have one more bonus lesson from Langston, and that is love what you do. Do it with flair and make friends along the way. Here's a beautiful excerpt from the beginning of his autobiography, I Wonder As I Wander. The Depression was in full sway. Thousands were out of a job. But I did not want a job. I wanted to continue to be a poet. Yet sometimes I wondered if I was barking up the wrong tree. I determined to find out by taking poetry, my poetry, to my people. I began to write to the presidents of all the Negro colleges in the South. Almost immediately, answers came back from several institutions offering to book me. I bought a Ford, but I couldn't drive, and I had no license. So I found a former classmate of mine at Lincoln University, Radcliffe Lucas. He could drive and had a good business head. I knew because he had worked his way through college running a weekend taxi service. So we set out about 5 o'clock one October morning, headed south. The back seat of the car was filled with luggage and books of mine to sell on tour. I carried along also a large number of books by other contemporary Negro writers for a cultural exhibit. As we left Harlem, the sun was rising. All was well. Langston Hughes became an ancestor on May 22, 1967. The cause of death was complications from abdominal surgery for prostate cancer. Langston was 66 years old. At the time of his death, Langston Hughes had published 48 books, written 11 major plays, and had an editor credit on one major anthology. Yes, Langston Hughes was the hardest working writer in Harlem. Rest well, Langston, rest well. This concludes our pep talk. I hope my words and the work ethic of the late great Langston Hughes has left you inspired and motivated to keep writing and finding ways to get your work out into the world, even when it's hard. Thank you for listening to this award-winning podcast. I know you don't have to listen, so I really appreciate that you do. And I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoy creating it, because I really do. If you do enjoy this show, please be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. Also, if you could please take a moment and leave a rating or a review for the show on Apple Podcasts. That will actually help more people find the show, and then they'll listen and they'll get inspired to write more, get their stories out into the world, and we'll all benefit. So please write those reviews. And, you know, just to stay on brand for this episode today, writing reviews is good practice and a way to up-level your skill set. So be like Langston, people, and write me a review and up-level those skills. Another thing you could do, if you just don't feel like writing, please just tell any of your podcast-loving writer friends to listen to the show. Friends don't keep this juicy literary goodness to themselves. And if you're looking for more creative writing inspiration, more literary juiciness and resources, make sure you check out all of the amazing content on the Read, Write, and Create website. That's at readwriteandcreate.com. Read is spelled R-E-E-D. Of course, I'm leaving a link in the show notes. And by the way, on the Read, Write, and Create blog, I just started a new column called BIPOC Book News, where I'm keeping track of all the news, trends, and new releases in the publishing world from a BIPOC perspective. Wait. I'm not done yet. Please don't go. I got to tell you one more thing. I just want to tell you, if you don't know, that we have a private membership community specifically for BIPOC women writers who want to get published and get paid. It's called The Sanctuary. Inside The Sanctuary, if you are a member, we offer writing workshops, co-writing sessions. We have authors come in and tell us about their lives and how to be successful like them. We have beta readers for your work, a book club, and opportunities galore to get published and get paid. And this is only $37 a month. I am literally trying to start a revolution for BIPOC writers. This is a movement. I am so excited about it, and things are popping inside The Sanctuary. So we have people getting new agents, getting grants, getting their books out into the world. It's really an amazing community. So if you're a BIPOC woman writer who has been searching for a supportive writing community and accountability partner for your writing life, please check out The Sanctuary. I'm leaving a link in the show notes, and we're having a open house so you can ask questions and learn more about The Sanctuary on March 17th. You can find a link to sign up for the open house in the show notes as well. All right, that's it. The Read, Write, and Create podcast is produced by me, Lori L. Tharps. Our editor is Brad Linder, and our theme music is by Wattaboy. I'll be back in 2 weeks on Monday with an exciting guest. Until then, though, keep writing.